Hello and welcome to episodes. What? That was all right.
So you're gargling the microphone.
All right, I'll sit a bit further back. When I listen to it, the big ones sound best and the little ones just sound shit. So I'm going to do it.
Yeah. It's like, it's really hard though. It's like there's like a little balance that's this right there.
Don't yell at people.
When you're not abusing, like they're just listening to it and suddenly like, oh my God, turn it off. Babies start crying.
Dogs are barking, car alarms are going off.
Shit, it's the Two Blokes Trading podcast again.
Planes falling from the sky. All right.
Hello and welcome to Two Blokes Trading. Join us, the two blokes, Tom and Owen, as we dive deep into the complex, exciting and potentially lucrative world of home trading.
Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Two Blokes Trading podcast. This week we update on our transformation from sad sacks to trading heroes. Thanks to last week's inspirational podcast, Tom finally updates on his backtesting results, and Siam Kidd returns to the podcast to tell us why the future is bright and the future is crypto. Tom, hello and good morning.
Good morning. This is good. You haven't abused me in the introduction. I'm feeling like I'm now a valued member of the team, and you've had to say good morning. So this is a good start to the podcast.
Do you know why this is? This is because I have the righteous glow of the recently exercised.
And you're not feeling the need to belittle people around you in order to make yourself feel better about yourself.
Lashing out like a fat, obese toddler hates himself on the ground he walks on. Now I levitate 1 inch above the ground everywhere I go walking on air because I am a boss.
How many times have you been to the gym in the last, I don't know, 6 months? Just give us, you know.
How many times have I been to the gym in 6 months?
Yeah, that's a good
before
figure,
this week, about four
just
times.
In general.
This week, five times.
Good, excellent.
But so I am broken, mate.
Yeah, I know. I hear it. I hear you moaning about it. Like every time you have to stand up or sit down, you're basically.
Yeah. I was crushing the deadlifts yesterday, mate. Crushing them, brah. And now I can't walk. Oh, well. These are the sacrifices physical specimens like me make, Tom. You would understand if you're like me.
So let me just understand this. So you are currently off the back of this the episode last week. You've been to gym five times, and now you think you're a hero. You're a god. You're Adonis.
Demigod, mate. Demigod, like Hercules.
Maybe we should interview your wife. See what she thinks.
I don't think she even knows I do a podcast, mate. I don't want to break the spell. Anyway, how's your week? Were you suitably inspired by Andy Demi?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope the guy, well, from a lot of the feedback we've had, lots of people have been as well, just kind of reevaluating the way they go about things. And I think it's that getting stuck in a rut and pulling yourself out of it. And I've just been noticing the time that I waste just messing around, not really doing anything particularly valuable, maybe watching a TV series or just probably moping about or whatever. Whereas now I'm like, right, I've got some free time. What can I do? Give me a book to read. Give me let's do some more research about whatever I'm doing on the internet. Let's do some more backtesting. So I obviously go for runs and all that kind of stuff. So I'm just trying to be a better human being, which is pretty hard work for me. And I know it really is for you.
Well, mate, so actually you mentioned TV. So, so Boris Johnson, current British Foreign Secretary, I was reading a thing a little while ago where they were saying, how do you have time to be an MP, like a cabinet member? You've written a novel or a book every single year. You write a weekly column, and he goes, I don't own a television. Simple as that. That's 3 hours a day saved over the average Joe. Boosh. There you go. That's a book a year, isn't it? So, yeah.
And Boris is a role model, isn't he? We can all aspire to be a fine specimen of a human being.
He doesn't really do fizz as well, does he? I don't think.
Yeah, he's got lots of free time. Yeah. Having said that, I do actually quite like Boris. It makes me laugh.
He's a good lad. Yeah, top lad. All right. And you've got a bit of a project, a little fizz project coming up, I believe.
A project. I think you'll find it's a test of human endurance. Which I invited you to, and you told me you're too fat and you couldn't do it. So I'm off to run for Hadrian's Wall. Going to do the whole kind of the good bit of Hadrian's Wall, pretty much from the west to the east of the UK.
Strong.
Which is where Julius Caesar, you can correct me being a historian, built the wall to keep out the pesky Scots.
You're close, mate, but it was a guy called Hadrian.
Ha 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 ha.
God. Yeah. Tom showing his true colours. Fantastic. Well researched, this podcast, isn't it?
So Julius Caesar, he invaded Britain originally.
Yeah, well, Julius Caesar first invaded Britain and he got to about Dover, had a look around and went, nah, and came back. And that was literally, he sacked it off. And then it was like 40, 50 years later, someone came and did it properly. And it was ages later when they built the Hadrian's Wall. Emperor Hadrian was just like, those Picts, those Celts, they're getting in my way. So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad we established that. And, yeah. Again, always about education on this podcast, you see. So good.
Yeah, never mind. Right, it was close, Tom.
I'm intrigued, though, that you've
decided to run across Great Britain, and what you've done is you've chosen the thinnest possible part.
Well, I think I found the most beautiful part of the country and most historically relevant. Obviously, I need a bit more education in that area, so I thought...
Hopefully, there'll be a plaque, mate, with some details at one end of it you can read.
And so I'm going to put my army Bergen and for 3 days unsupported, I'm going to go out camping in my one-man tent, which is basically like a coffin. And so I'm really looking forward to it. I literally couldn't find anybody else to do it with me, which is pretty sad times. Brilliant. Sam, if you're listening to this podcast, which is one of my mates who said he was going to do it with me, yeah.
Yeah, he's not listening, mate. He sacked you off on this as well. Sorry.
He's probably too busy laughing.
Yeah, that's it. Well, at least when you inevitably die of thirst on day two, they can wrap you up in your coffin tent and bring you home. So that's fine.
That's a cheery thought to move on with the podcast. Yeah. So, what's going on?
So we've probably just used all the time we're going to use to talk about actual trading routine and what we've done, thanks to Andy. So we'll have to cover that next week, I think, mate.
Yeah, cool. The interview this week is actually epic and goes on for a while. We're really keen to kind of do a decent wrap up at the end of it. So in terms of our detail for our trading routine, we've got some more kind of rules and kind of hold ourselves accountable with it, which we're going to talk about next week, guys. So just tune in for that.
This week, we have to cover the thing that we put back from last week, which is your results.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'm back testing results just using one of the six trade support club systems. It's a swing trading system. And yeah, so over the currency pairs that I used, I managed to get about a 44% return from 2014. And that's using about 5 different currency pairs. And this system is designed to be stretched over, you know, 20, even 30 currency pairs using the same system in order to kind of make that kind of percentage return, you know, larger.
Okay, nice one. So you think actually extrapolated out over a year and all the currency pairs, you'll make a pretty good return.
Yeah, I mean, you're the mathematician here / historian. Right,
give me the numbers again.
It's 44% since 2014.
Yeah.
Over 5 different currency pairs.
Okay, so 44 divided by 3.5, or 3.5 years effectively, is 12% a year per 5 currency pairs. But if you're going to do 30 currency pairs, we can times that number by 6, which equals 75% a year. Which is not bad, mate, I'll be honest, for one swing trading system. Of course, you then have to realistically divide that by half for the bias of back testing. So you're looking at 30-40% a year, which would be pretty epic, to be honest, mate.
Yeah, yeah. So it's better than a kick in the stones. And what's cool about that is that there's 2 other swing trading systems as part of the kind of the trade support club education coaching. So that's, you know, you overlay layers on layers, and that's where you get your redundancy and obviously your increased returns. That's what at least I'm hoping for.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been using that system for years, right? And they still stand by it. And Ali still actually trades it with his money, has done for years. So I'd be disappointed if you back tested it all and found it didn't work, right?
Yeah. Avid listeners of the podcast will know that I'm still grapple with the issues with support and resistance lines and the concept of how to plot them, because we've had a few guests on that say that they are the thing you have to use, and then we have guests on that say, well, yeah, they're completely arbitrary and you just put 10 lines in the chart and you could almost argue for any line. Okay, so I in terms of backtesting, going back, I really, really struggled. But one really good point from this course I want to mention is that, so I sent in an email to their support outlining kind of my issues, and I got an instant response back from Ali saying, Tom, get yourself in the coaching room, we're going to go over this tonight, you and I, and I'm going to show you exactly how I do it, which is really cool. And then I went in the room, and even better, he recorded that session. And what I'm going to do is put it in the show notes and put it in the Facebook community, that hour-long coach or 40-minute coaching session about support and resistance lines, so that everyone can see the way that Ali goes about it and kind of the support that you get given if you're with a trade support club.
Nice one. No, and that's great. So they identified a specific thing you're having issue with, and it's not just because like we're talking about them on the podcast, right? Everyone gets that. If they're a paid up member, they get that coaching, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. We're not being treated any differently, which is nice to see.
Yeah, and so you also get sort of a flavor of this if you join up for the free membership. We mentioned it before in the podcast. So 3 months free membership. If you go to tscmember.co.uk, that's tscmember.co.uk/TBT, and they do the Thursday webinar. So it was great to see loads of people in the Thursday webinar from the Two Blokes Training community, people that had obviously listened and signed up, and a few of them have actually gone on already to go and buy the full thing. So obviously like what they saw.
And it's good, yeah. And that webinar itself is just great to go and ask all those niggling questions you may have about coaching and how it works, and to a specifically profitable trader. It's quite a relaxed and friendly environment, so definitely worth popping your head through the door with that one as well.
Yep.
We're hopefully going to be there as and when we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, you can sign up anytime, right? So it's not, you don't have to have already signed up. It's not a specific 3 months. You can sign up tomorrow and still get 3 months and still hit the Thursday webinar. So
absolutely.
Mega. All right, mate. So we've got Siam Kidd. People remember Siam Kidd from TheRealisticTrader.com. He's a guy that came on and talked all about trend following, massive trends, trying to jump on the massive trends, which he calls the Lamborghini trades. And that was a very interesting podcast. He's here to talk about the topic of the day, something very vogue, which is cryptocurrencies, and how he believes, or he used to believe, that they were pants, and now he believes that they are mega.
Oh, you've ruined it now.
Oh, no. Two Blokes Trading welcomes back Siam Kidd from TheRealisticTrader.com. Siam, last time you came on the show, talked all about how to make a living outside of your living, trend trading around a job, and coining the phrase Lamborghini trades for some of his mega trend trades. Today, slightly different topic, Siam.
Hello, yes indeed, completely different market.
so welcome back on the show. How have you been in the intervening 7 months?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, thanks for having me back. Just been a bit of a recluse, really. I've sort of taken my eye off the ball slightly with the trading. My other parts of my life have sort of consumed me, which is the mergers and acquisitions side. So I'm furiously trying to sell some businesses at the moment.
Yeah, last time we spoke, I think you had 7 businesses on the go, with a few more on the pipeline, but now you're rationalising, are you?
Yeah, I am. I got up to, I think, about 13 businesses, and I've sold 5. And I really crave the day, those simple days of just having one business. So I want to get back down to 4, and then I'll have more time to focus.
4 is enough. 4 is enough, especially if you've got the job of being a trader as well.
Yeah. So, but yeah, all is good.
Excellent. Well, we had a really good response to your last interview, and I really enjoyed it. And it gave me that, I suppose it probably was the first thing that set me on the path to where I am now, which is very much swing trading, trading around business and life, rather than trying to be glued to the screen 8 hours a day and try and fit life around that. Yeah. So that was great. And today, like I said, it's very different. So we're going to be talking about cryptocurrencies, and specifically 7 reasons why you didn't used to trade cryptos, but now you do.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So just a quick caveat there. I don't trade cryptos. And okay. Yeah, you'd be foolish to trade cryptos because it's such an illiquid market. But yeah, we'll get onto that later.
Interesting. No doubt. All right. Okay, good. So I mean, people listening to this will know that we haven't done a great deal of prep chat before this because I wanted this to be true to the conversation. So I don't really know what you're going to say. So I am quite intrigued.
Hope I don't disappoint.
Yeah, it's fine. It won't go out and no one will ever know anyway, mate. All right. So before we do that, probably some people listen will go, oh, hang on, isn't this a Forex podcast that occasionally touches on stocks and shares? So what exactly are you talking about? So could you give us 1 or 2 minutes on what exactly cryptocurrencies are?
Yeah, sure. So this is, when I first got into this, I was confused myself as well, because I was like, well, what the hell is a cryptocurrency? And like the easiest way to say it is it's an online currency. It's like an internet currency. But then that made me think, well, how is it different than PayPal? Yeah. And because PayPal, effectively, you can send money through email, etc. Well, the thing is, with PayPal, you have a lot of intermediaries. So even though you're sending, so you basically put your money onto PayPal, you send money to someone else's PayPal account, but along the way, there will be middlemen, i.e. banks and exchanges, and you have commissions and whatnot. So it wasn't a true internet currency, so to speak. It was just like sending it to another bank. Whereas cryptos is a true an internet currency as you can get, and really peer-to-peer. So I can send Bitcoin or any other currency or cryptocurrency directly to you. So from my wallet into your wallet, and no one else will touch it. There won't be any fees. Well, very minimal fees. So that's that. And so that's what a cryptocurrency is. Now, with cryptos, you can't really talk about cryptos without having a little look at blockchain. Now, blockchain is something which really confused me for a while, because in essence, it's an online spreadsheet, so to speak. It's a distributed ledger. There's two examples of blockchain, because if you understand blockchain, you can sort of understand cryptos a lot easier. So the first explanation of blockchain is the YAPS. So there's a civilization in Micronesia called the YAPS, and for a long, long time, they've had a money system where they have these things called rhizestones. And a rhizestone are these huge stones with like big holes in the middle. And that's what their money is. And basically, whenever someone did a transaction with someone, all they're doing is basically swapping ownership of these different stones, which are dotted around the island. So if someone's like Joe sold a pig to Bob, they'd both go, right, okay, I now own this part of this stone. Do you agree? Yeah, I agree. And what they then tell the village, going, right, I now own this part of the stone. It's mine now. And everyone would sort of agree. And it's like, yeah, it's crazy, right? But they've done that for thousands of years. And
that's a completely different take on the whole idea of currency, like one that most people wouldn't even think of.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you had these huge immovable stones. And in fact, it got to the point where once they were doing some sort of international trade, and a boat with a big rhizestone sunk, and the rhizestone was like just off the shore of the island, but they still used that stone as part of the money supply. So they're like, yeah, I own this part of the stone, even though it's underwater and no one can actually see it.
Which ultimately is what currency is at the end of the day, isn't it? It doesn't actually mean anything. You could choose bits of wallpaper on a wall, I suppose.
Exactly. It's just confidence. And so that basically is the world's first blockchain, so to speak, because everyone sort of knew about that transaction. And the easier way, which I now think of it, is having a five-a-side football match. So you're at school, you know, you've probably put jumpers down as goalposts, you all play football, and then someone scores, right? So it's 1-0. And it's a legitimate goal. Everyone's like, yep, 1-0, good goal. Let's move on. But let's just say the goalkeeper was a bit disappointed and was like, nope, that goal was false, he was offside, or whatever. And the thing is, everyone in that team, all 10 people on the pitch, or 9 out of 10 people on the pitch, have agreed that it was a legitimate goal. And so that knowledge that it's 1-0 is basically a blockchain. They all agree that, you know, the score is 1-0, even though the keeper is like, no. And so that's why Bitcoin and all these cryptos is pretty cool, because no one can really interfere with it. So if I sent a Bitcoin to you and a few other nodes agreed that this transaction took place and it was legitimate, if some nefarious sort of operator went, no, that Bitcoin is mine, all the other nodes will go, no, that guy's being a dick. Ignore that person. So so that's basically blockchain. And every so with, obviously, there are different types of blockchain. But if you look at Bitcoin, that blockchain is completely transparent. So every transaction on the planet, no matter who's sending it to who, is out there on the blockchain, and you can see. And you can see which address it went to. But obviously what you don't know is who
that person is.
Yeah.
So it's a way of building confidence in this electronic product without a centralized person, an authority figure saying this is legitimate. It's legitimate because the community says it's legitimate.
Correct. Yeah. And the banks, as you can imagine, are shitting themselves.
Yes. because they're suddenly about to be completely pointless.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, that will be one of the reasons that we'll go talk about in a sec. So
okay. All right. I think so. And I mean, you know, what is cryptocurrency? What is blockchain? Could fill a whole series of podcasts. So people will appreciate if that was, you know, a quick overview. So, and I'm sure if they go to your website and they can find out, you know, a little bit more detail on that, and as well as the rest of the things we're going to discuss. But so what's the state of the market right now in terms of tradable, investable, buyable, usable cryptocurrencies specifically?
Yeah, it's exploding. It really is. So the market is just under $1 billion in market cap. It's growing almost exponentially. There's about 1,000 cryptocurrencies out there at the moment. Most of them, 99% of them, are pure bullshit. I was chatting with Tom earlier that, like, anyone that's like, oh yeah, you need to buy this particular coin, etc., it really is a mug's game. It's no different than picking some penny stock on the AIM market. It's a purely futile task, just picking a couple of crypto coins out there, hoping it's going to be the next Bitcoin or Ethereum. In this whole market, the two big boys at the moment are Bitcoin and Ethereum. So Bitcoin is the daddy. It was created in 2009. And during the aftermath of the subprime mortgage collapse, really, where, you know, we saw, you know, ZERP and QE 1, 2, 3, Infinity, etc. And, you know, there was a bit of a demand for, you know, honest money, which can't just be inflated away. Or diluted away, so to speak. And yeah, with Bitcoin, there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoins ever. And so that's sort of why people are calling Bitcoin digital gold, because of it's got sort of inbuilt scarcity within it. So, but okay. That's about it, really. There's and also Ethereum is like the new boy on the block, and it's all about smart contracts. So they've basically built this platform where you can build all sorts of different smart contracts and other cryptos. I think there's about 300 different cryptocurrencies which use the Ethereum platform. So, I mean, that in itself is a bit of a risk, because if Ethereum goes tits up, then good night the whole crypto market temporarily, because all the other cryptos will go bust.
Built on it, that's the platform. Yeah. All right, interesting. So it's. I mean, this is the overwhelming impression you get from a lot of people, is that this is an area fraught with danger. And that's why until now I have stayed away. I mean, we did a podcast about a year ago where I sort of indicated that I thought the Bitcoin was the first and therefore couldn't be the best, and maybe something else will come. And hey, look, now I look smart. I also said you shouldn't buy it, and it's rocketed through the roof, so I don't look smart. But I stayed away. Lots of people have stayed away because they are scared, effectively, of what could happen. As I understand it from our small prelim chat, you stayed away for a long time, for many years. But now you are actively looking at this as an area where money can be made. But interestingly, you said there that not in a trading sense. So, all right, so let's take it from the top. Seven reasons why you're now interested in cryptocurrencies. Let's phrase it like that.
Shall I start with the negatives first? Because I think
yes, definitely for balance. Yeah,
yeah. Because if you know the reasons why I was anti, it will make more sense when we go through the others. So
okay.
So the first reason was that the whole sort of crypto community dislikes fiat currencies, i.e., the pound, the dollar, every other currency, basically. And they're saying that, you know, cryptos, you know, are, you know, not fiat currencies, and I was always smirking at them, because a crypto is still a pseudo fiat currency. It's not backed by anything. It's not backed by gold or anything. And the only all it has backing it is are sort of the cryptographic laws inbuilt within them, and the sort of the inbuilt scarcity, i.e. Bitcoin will only have 21 million, etc. So that was, it's just a bit funny. Because, as you know, a proper monetary system is a currency backed by real money, i.e. gold and silver.
Which nothing really is anymore.
Yeah, nothing is. Every currency on the planet is backed by just the government edict. The word fiat stands for by government edict. So, and the only reason it's worth anything, because it's what we are forced to pay our taxes and mortgage/rent in.
And so to suggest that Bitcoin was, or whatever, was invalid because it wasn't backed in any real value, was to misunderstand currencies in their entirety.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the first one. The second one, regardless of what anyone says, this is the biggest bubble in human history. Literally, bar none. It makes the tulip mania of 1636 look absolutely insignificant. I cannot stress how big this bubble will be. Like anything that goes from 65,000% growth in 6 months, like Stratus, and like God knows how many others out there, it's a bubble. It really is. And this is no different. This is just tech bubble 2.0. Like we had the tech bubble from 1997 till sort of 2000, 2001. This is the crypto bubble, or the tech bubble 2.0, where it's from 2017 till sort of 2020, 21. So this is another reason why I stayed away for a long time, because I was like, God, I mean, Bitcoin went from 5 cents a Bitcoin up to almost $3,000 a Bitcoin. Mm. It's huge. So the third reason why I wasn't too keen was that the risk. I mean, this is the wild, wild west. It really is. The exchange risk, the third party counter risk. So you can't hack Bitcoin. So the NSA tried to hack Bitcoin for 6 months straight and then gave up, which is impressive. So that really shows how strong the Bitcoin algorithms are, inbuilt sort of security is. However, the exchanges where you go and buy cryptos, they are getting hacked left, right, and center. There was a big one that got bust called Mt. Gox, which was the biggest exchange in the world at the time, and hundreds of millions of dollars were stolen. Also, your wallets can get hacked, as in the place where you store your crypto. So I was like, cryptos may be good, but how the hell do you protect them if everyone's hacking things left, right, and center? So that sort of put me off for a while. Four, the central banks and governments don't like them one bit. And I mean, there's a phrase on the markets of don't fight the Fed, as in the Federal Reserve, because you will nearly always lose. And again, I was like, well, it's exactly the same here. The central banks have spent 113 years getting their sort of squid-like tentacles around the world. They're not just going to roll over and go, well done, Bitcoin. You've got us. Control and power is everything for the elite, so to speak. So they're not just going to give that up. So, that is number four. Number five, the top investing rule ever is never, ever, ever invest in something you don't understand. Simple as that. And to be honest, I didn't understand cryptos for a long time, not properly. I didn't really give it the time of space to... I didn't really give it the respect to at least research into it a bit. And originally, and I mean, this sort of goes back to my definitions of an idiot. So I've got two definitions of an idiot when it comes to investing. One is to form an opinion based on zero research or due diligence just zero research, basically.
Or
just
a tip, yeah.
Yeah, like unfounded opinions, basically.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. And the second definition of an idiot is... holding on to a belief or an opinion when the marketplace or the ecosystem or environment around you has shifted. So yes, you may have formed a correct opinion of, I don't know, X is blah, but if the facts around you change and you still hold that belief, you're then an idiot.
Yeah, because so, you're going to physically, like, you're going to pay the price with actual cash for your dogma, which is literally exactly. The worst idea ever in investing.
The market is completely neutral, doesn't give a shit about what you think or care about. And to be honest, I, for the last 18 months, I have been an idiot when it comes to crypto. So I researched the hell out of cryptos strongly around sort of 2013 and chose to, and it was still a massive risk / punt. Probably about early 2016, the marketplace really did change, and I wasn't swift enough. So that's that. Number six, Bitcoin wasn't and still isn't scalable for everyday use. I mean, it still takes 30 to 60 minutes to do a Bitcoin transaction. So there was me thinking, well, if I'm going to Starbucks to buy my, I don't know, macchiato or whatever it is, I'm not going to stand there for an hour waiting for the transaction to go through.
And it would be cold.
Yeah, it would be cold. And like, if you look at the SWIFT network, which is where most or all euro transactions is done from, I think it does like 20,000 transactions a second, whereas Bitcoin struggles to go anywhere near there. So I was thinking huge scalability problems. And also at the time, there weren't really any alternatives to Bitcoin. I mean, there are now. You have like Monero, Dash, Zcoin. Like you have all Zcash. You have all of these others which are frighteningly fast in terms of transactions. So, and then the seventh reason why I really wasn't keen when it came to Bitcoin is this bottleneck in China, which pretty much everyone I speak to is completely oblivious to. So in Shenzhen, which is like this industrial powerhouse of the world, 25% of Bitcoin's computing power is located in a couple of warehouses in Shenzhen. And these are basically four wallets or slash four nodes where, 25, a quarter of Bitcoin's computing power. Now, if an earthquake were to happen or a bomb to blow up the buildings or hell, the Chinese government just turned the power off in that area, 25% of Bitcoin's power will evaporate instantly. And the ramifications of that would be the Bitcoin blockchain would freeze. They could probably get things up. I mean, they could, the whole community would reallocate power, but as in computing power, but it would take probably 3 weeks to do that. But it'll probably take 3 months before you can place a trade. So what do you think will happen to the price if that happens?
So you're going to be stuck in a currency that crashes through the floor.
Yeah, no one will be able to buy, no one will be able to sell. And finally, when transactions go through a few months later, guess what? They're mostly, you know...
Which direction are they going to be in, right?
Yeah, it's going to go rock bottom. So in a sense, that's an opportunity because you can then buy it like whilst everyone's throwing the baby out in the bathwater. So... they're the seven reasons why I really wasn't too keen. I mean, does that make sense? Does that sort of encompass
absolutely.
Most people?
I mean, if we were to stop this at this point, I think people were going, right, so I'm not doing that then. we've sort of got about 10 to 15 minutes now to flip this on its head and say, okay, right, it's now July 2017. You've given us some very comprehensive reasons why this is not something you wanted to do, but now it is.
Yeah, I sort of cringe because ever since 2009, I've been one of those people that have been saying, oh no, it's a bubble that's going to burst. And it goes from, like, I know, $100 down to like 20. And I go, hey, told you so. And then it shoots up to $1,000. And I go, hey, it's a bubble. It's gonna pop. And it goes like $1,000 down to $200. I'm like, see, I told you. But it just keeps on doing this. And like, it's going to keep on doing that up to sort of $10,000 to $100,000 of Bitcoin. It really will. And the thing is, FOMO is a bitch, fear of missing out. So, okay, the seven reasons. The cryptocurrency space, whether it's cryptos or ICOs, it's the first time a new major asset class has been introduced to the world since 1694, when the UK government first released their gilt, the UK government bond. And like with anything, if you look at history, whenever a new asset class is introduced, guess what? Money tends to sort of flirt with it and then pile into it. So that's the first reason.
So we've done the flirting, you think?
Yeah,
we're primed for the piling.
Yes, definitely. I mean, we've had the pioneers and the early the innovators and pioneers have jumped onto this. So in the early days, and now we're getting the early majority. So I consider myself as the early majority, and then you have the late majority. This is all about the law of diffusion of innovation. I mean, Google it. You'll see the graph there.
I'll believe you.
Sorry. But basically, the masses are the late majority. We're still early days when it comes to cryptos. Now, here's a quick question. So this is the second reason. And this stat blew my mind when I first sort of found out. How many people do you think do not have access to the internet on the planet out of the 7 billion people on the planet?
I reckon... maybe don't have access at all, maybe 2 billion,
okay.
Maybe 3.
Cool. Yeah, so I was way out. When I remember one day I was like, I wonder how many people don't have access to the internet. And I thought, like, me being an idiot, I thought pretty much everyone had access to the internet. But it turns out 3.2 billion people don't have the internet, which is like almost half. Oh, yeah. I'm like, holy shit. And then I was wondering, how many people don't have a bank account? Well, guess what? It's the same demographic. 3.2 billion people on the planet in 2017 don't have the internet or a bank account.
Yeah,
the
bank account's surprising, isn't it? Like, yeah. Nothing, not even like a, you know, something in a rural area, just like a local thing, just nothing.
No, and it's because that demographic are basically sort of the poorest parts of Asia and Africa. And that then sort of led me to believe, I was like, well, okay, well, those 3.2 billion people, they're going to have it, they're going to be coming online over the next decade, which is unfreaking believable. You're going to have half, like 3 billion, by that time, it's going to be about 3.5 billion people joining. It's going to be the age of enlightenment, actually, because, you know, all these people, yes, they're poor, it doesn't mean they're stupid. So, and also, guess what? They're not going to get a bank account, are they? Because they don't have an address and like utility bills and stuff like that. So
HSBC doesn't have a branch in their village, right? So they've got to do something else.
Yeah. And these people, they're actually quite entrepreneurial. They're all like bartering. They're all trading like fish for chickens and stuff like that. And when they get online, they're going to continue being entrepreneurial. And so they're just going to get a crypto account. So like, that demographic, those 3.5 billion people, they're just going to get a crypto account when they come on board over the next decade. So that's a huge stat. That's one massive macro trend, which
that trend of mobile banking in Africa, when everyone thought that mobile banking was going to be the super high tech thing that a few early adopters in the West would do, and actually it turned out to be really convenient and perfectly suited to the African market, who maybe didn't have all the super broadband and stuff we've got. So this could actually be that same weird inverse thing of newly online people do the most complex thing.
Yeah, exactly. Same with the mobile. If you look at the adoption of mobile phones in that demographic as well, like, yeah, I mean, there are companies like Huawei, who are, you know, and all these other companies that want to get a smart mobile into the hands of people for less than $30, which it will happen. So that's number two. Number three, the crypto market cap is exploding, yet the public haven't set foot in it. So I'm being really, really conservative here. And when you're looking at the stats of how many accounts and wallets there are, etc., only one. There's about 15 million accounts open, which means there's only one in 500 people playing in the markets. Now, I think that stat is quite overly conservative because I myself have four accounts. So,
right, okay.
So most people have multiple accounts.
And there could be a couple of million, three million, 4 million, 5 million.
I'd probably say one in a thousand are investing in cryptos. I mean, I'd love to send one of my staff onto the streets and ask 1,000 people in Norwich, are you investing in cryptos? We're lucky to get one person out of the whole of Norwich. I don't know.
I don't know anyone from my personal life at all who has bought any cryptocurrencies that they've admitted.
Yeah. And the thing is, we've had this ridiculous explosion of growth, yet the public haven't set foot in it. And the thing is, even though this is a bubble, the things that pop bubbles are the public. The public do the worst thing at the wrong time, always. You need to use the public as a contrarian indicator. And at the moment, people have literally thumb in bum, mind in neutral. They haven't got a clue about this. So, and a good indicator of when, you know, the public's starting to come in is when you see it in the, you know, on Fox News every day, all day, or the front page of the Sun newspaper, buy Bitcoin, or every taxi driver is going, oh yeah, you need to buy Monero, or you need to buy Ethereum, etc. That's a good indicator when the public are starting to get or become aware of it, or it's on, you know, Love Island. Like the monkeys on Love Island are talking about it. So I don't watch it. My wife does, but I swear it's like looking at a zoo.
Same thing. Yeah, it's finished now. Thank goodness.
Oh, is it? Oh, thank God. Sorry.
Ruin it for anyone that hasn't seen the final. Don't worry.
I watched 10 minutes and I swear my IQ fell like 10 points.
Yeah.
Number four, why I'm quite keen. Blockchain is going to consume the planet just like the internet did. It is like the internet in the mid-90s. It really is. It's just everything will have a form of blockchain in it. All businesses, everywhere you go. you'd be a fool not to get into at least research blockchain. I recommend anyone under the age of, you know, any kid that's listening to this, just get shit hot at knowing blockchain, because the world of business is going to completely revolutionize with this. Number five, sort of leads on to with blockchain. It's going to kill every single middleman industry on the planet. So banks, they're screwed. That's why they're playing billions into this to remain relevant. Estate agents, business brokers. I mean, here's a $1 billion idea. Here's how to kill the estate agency business. You basically have an online estate agency where everything is on a blockchain and with smart contracts. So there is no reason why you cannot buy or sell a house in the space of 20 minutes. Because all you need to do is let's say the seller puts his house on your online platform. You put all the deeds, the land, the contracts, all the legal stuff on a smart contract on the blockchain. And then all that happens is, you know, the punter will come along, like on eBay. I'll go, oh, I like that house, buy. And then the moment that the person signed all the forms and sent the money, the smart contracts will go, cool. It's basically, if this happens, then that. That's all it is. So, what a smart contract is.
So it's unavoidable. If you've put it up on your side and on their side, they meet the criteria on their side, you can't go, no take backs and take the money or anything like
correct.
That.
None of this bullshit where you go to complete and then someone pulls out last minute or whatever. Like the moment the funds, the signatures, everything has all been completed, the smart contract will distribute the monies to the correct people, the fees to the lawyers, everything, the deeds, you get the deeds. Like it should happen in like under 20 minutes.
And nobody anywhere, even the guy that provides the blockchain platform, can fiddle with it. It is correct. Secure. It's happening.
Yeah. And this is huge it's huge for third world countries because land deeds and like land registry is a massive like fraud.
Yeah. Corruption can just be squashed. I mean, NGOs, third world give it, like, or whatever it's called now, developed world giving, like third world aid. Like, how do you stop them creaming a bit off the top? Well, you use a smart contract through blockchain and the money ends up in the right bank account.
Boom. Exactly. And same with charities, like all these top charities, like, I won't say any names, but most I know, like some sort of inner sort of workings with the charity world, because I've just set up my own charity and whatnot. But like it's ridiculous how little money actually gets to the actual cause. Through
so you could say, charity. I want to donate to this particular panda, and it will get there to that panda's personal little bank account.
Yeah. So so blockchain is going to kill every middleman business. So. Yeah, don't be a middleman.
But that's 90% of the Western economy, so I have, mate. Yeah. No one creates anything. Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah. So number six, cryptos, I now believe, is one of the best hedges against central bank and government policies, i.e. manipulation, and also market pandemics. So when the market starts to crash, which it will, people are going to flock to things which just can't get printed away. Because guess what? Every government is just going to turn on the printing presses like crazy. I mean, look at Venezuela. They're hitting 700% inflation this year. Give it 18 months, 2 years, it'll be in hyperinflation. Yeah. So
people will never learn about that one, will they?
Never, never. Like, the only constant in the world are humans. So that's the reason why the history is the best forecaster of the future, in my opinion, when it comes to big things. So then the last reason why I'm all in is actually one of the negative reasons why it kept me away for so long, and that this is the biggest bubble in human history. And when you flip it on its head, that means this is the biggest opportunity in human history. It's the biggest greater fool's game ever. And it is a greater fool's game. Literally, you need to get in now before the idiot public get in.
And then get out before it goes bang.
Exactly. So you have two opportunities here. You get in now, you accumulate a position, and you wait. Literally, only use risk capital, as in stuff you can afford to lose. Wait till the public come rushing in. Come back in 3 years and realize, holy shit, you know, your $1,000 is now turned into X amount of dollars, and then exit whilst the public are rushing in. Wait till the bubble pops. Everything will disappear, like in the tech bubble, 90% of everything just evaporated. And then you can come in and buy the blue chips at a bargain. Like with the tech bubble, you could come in and buy Microsoft, Amazon, Google, IBM, Dell, all of these companies for absolute like fire sales. And that's the same with cryptos. When this does pop, Although I think even though Bitcoin and Ethereum are the daddies right now, the Facebook and Google of this sector hasn't been born yet.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. We're playing with like Alta Vista, Netscape and AOL at the moment.
GeoCities.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, they're the seven pros and cons. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, sorry, my thoughts are probably plentiful and would be quite long. I think this is going to have to roll into a part two, mate. So I'll tell you what, we'll pause it here. I'll say fascinating, you know, the balance, the seven reasons why not, and now the seven reasons why. And I love the fact that one of them is the same reason on both. That sort of thing tickles me. And so let's park it, mate. Thank you so much. And we'll speak to you again next week.
No worries.
For part two, which will be all about how to take advantage of this opportunity if you're a retail punter like me.
Cool. Yeah, I hope it helps. And thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Siam. So I love interviews like that. What interviews that kind of rejig my preconceived opinions about something and then get me excited about the future and the different opportunities that are going to arise. And that probably is taking one of the top spots for all-time favorite interview so far. Even so much so that, as we say on the interview, we're going to roll that over to a second interview for next week. So definitely stay tuned for that bad boy.
Yeah, you love a new idea, don't you, mate? We know that. So,
I like new ideas, but I like good new ideas. Yeah. You've got to be open-minded. If you're closed-minded, Owen, then then you never get. You know, you're going to miss the bus, the train, the tram, and the motorbike.
Yes, which I don't want to do. Ideally, yes. I am also a neophile. Say it carefully. So I like new things as well. But I think Simon is on something. I think he has changed his mind at the right time. You know, he's a very honest guy, willing to admit that he was very against this stuff. But now he's realized, no, this is the way of the future. This is what's going to be massive. For all those reasons you mentioned there, you know, like this hugely growing market of 3.2 billion more people. And where are they going to go? They're not going to go out and buy, you know, Dell PC desktops and use, you know, like Internet Explorer, are they? They're going to do whatever the latest thing is, and they're all going to come and they're going to flood into new blockchain technologies, new blockchain markets, companies, different ways of using smart contracts. And that's all wrapped up in cryptocurrencies as well. So very interesting.
If I, you know, was a middleman right now, I'd be panicking slightly. And probably if I was a bank, I'd be heavily investing into blockchain technology to make sure I'm at the forefront of the technology evolution and make sure that I don't miss the train.
Yes. Yeah, if I was a bank as well, I think I'd probably just retire, but that's fine.
retire rich and happy.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And so we can't go into too much detail, I suppose, now on how we would then try and profit from this, because that kind of is the point of next week's episode. But suffice to say that this is something big. It's not going to be for everyone though, is it? Because it is a risky thing, isn't it? Let's be honest.
I think it's really risky. And everybody who even touches or talks about Bitcoin about cryptocurrencies that'll be the first thing that they say. And you only have to look at the markets, the charts, and look at any of the cryptocurrencies. Firstly, they seem fairly linked at the moment, which is good but also bad. Yeah. From a trading perspective, and the lack of liquidity in the market, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a massive risk associated with it. And I think that for both of our positions, you know, the key is research. And maybe there's a podcast to be made about it, mate.
Could be. So if you are listening to this today on the 31st of July 2017, when it comes at 3 p.m., then you will be aware, hopefully, and you are now aware, that in 5 hours' time, that is 8 p.m. today on the 31st of July 2017, there is a webinar from Ashraf Lady, who is one of the few people I know who actively trades cryptocurrencies. He is doing it in conjunction with our partner XTB. There is a link in the show notes, so go on that. As we always say, you're probably going to need to go on the website rather than your whatever your phone podcasting app is, because they don't like clicky things on those. Click on that, sign up for the webinar. I will be there because I think that is going to be very informative. And moreover, Thomas, there is a conference, which checks his calendar, is on Saturday the 19th of August, run by XTB again. It's a cryptocurrencies masterclass at their HQ in London. As we have mentioned before, they run an open door policy.
It's towards the top of Canary Wharf, isn't it? So pretty cool place to go up to visit. And I think one of the first live conferences about cryptocurrencies, trading cryptocurrencies in the UK. So unfortunately, Owen, I'm not going to be there, I'm afraid.
You're going to be in Africa.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
So yes, I have to be there.
Yeah, so people get to see you, mate. Oh, no, it's going to be one of those things where people meet the people they listen to the podcast and they're just really disappointed. Okay, advice, listeners, just set expectations really low and you'll have a great time from Owen's perspective.
What you really wanted to say there was meet their heroes, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but then it would be a lie, which is why I avoided using that term.
Yeah, I understand, Tom, if people won't be their hero. I understand.
So
I'll be there. It'll be excellent. And I think Ashraf's going to be there, plus a whole bunch of other people. All about, basically, if you're thinking about doing it, you want to dip your toe in, why not go to free events and free webinars where you can hear all about it? And if it's not for you, it's not for you. And if you go, you know what, there is an opportunity there, then you can get involved. Good. That is that. Links to all that in the show notes, as always. And if you want to check out XTB themselves, they are the broker we use with our Real Money Live accounts. We use them because we think they're amazing. And you can check them out at twoblokestrading.com/XTB.
And although Owen's ego, by the sound of it, doesn't need any more stroking now, he's going to the gym and all that good stuff. If you find the time, you're enjoying the podcast, get yourself onto iTunes, look for the Two Blokes Trading podcast and rate and review there. It makes a difference and gives a smile to our face. So other than that, I think that's pretty much all I've got to say this week, since I massively managed to embarrass myself in front of tens of thousands of people.
Yes, you did. I had a quick Google between that part of the show and this part of the show, and it was about, I think it was 14 years between the old Julius Caesar turning up and then the actual invasion. So I wasn't myself 100% correct, but, you know, more correct than you, let's be honest.
I don't need your pity.
Are you sure?
Right, yeah. All right, mate, have a good one. I'll be a broken man, but I'll try and update the Facebook page with a few photos of my adventures as well. Aren't you lucky?
Thanks for listening to the Two Blokes Trading podcast with Tom and Owen. Be sure to subscribe and check out twoblokestrading.com, and we'll see you back here next Monday.